Welcome to this special edition of Government at Work. I'm Russ Belville. New York is one of the 29 states with active medical marijuana programs, but also one of four that does not allow marijuana smoking by patients. At the recent Cannabis World Congress and Business Exposition at the Javits Center, State Senator Diane Savino, a key figure in crafting New York's medical law, spoke about expanding the medical program and the prognosis for adult-use marijuana in the Empire State. Activist correspondent Wayne Reese was at the CWCBE and brings us Senator Savino's speech in its entirety.
I can't like walk past him and give him a quick kiss because I need a ladder to do so. Thank you for that lovely introduction, Margaret. And he's right. The first time we shared a dais together was 4 years ago at the first Cannabis World Expo here. I think we were at the Marriott Marquis. So it's interesting to see how much we've grown in 4 years, right? So I see Scott's in the back there somewhere. Amazing how much we've grown in the 4 years, no pun intended. And it's been an amazing 4 years for the marijuana industry, not just here in New York State, but across the country. And so, you know, I thought I'd talk a little bit about where we've been, where we're going, the history in New York State, and what I think are the next steps for cannabis. And I think one of the things I'd like to do is get us all used to talking about it and calling it cannabis. And it's hard even for me.
Yes.
Right? It is. It's hard. I still lapse into marijuana, but mostly what I would like to say to the members of the press that are here, and I know some of them are here, and you're going to write stories about this week, and you're going to talk about the convention and the event, please, please, stop using words like weed and pot. When you're talking about medical cannabis, we have to begin to change the way people think about it. And I want to start there. When I got involved in the quest to bring the Compassionate Care Act to the floor of the New York State Senate, eventually to the desk of Andrew Cuomo to have him sign it, I knew that I was taking on two issues. One was developing public health policy, you know, recognizing that we had New Yorkers, many of whom were suffering with a chronic, lifelong, debilitating condition, and they had one of two choices. They were either going to have to live with that condition, or they were going to have to become dependent upon highly addictive, dangerous drugs. And for them, they didn't want that. They wanted another choice. And they knew that in other parts of the country, in other states, those states had already taken a step forward in allowing those patients to have access to a tightly regulated, safe, clean product that provided them relief from those conditions. And why shouldn't we do that here in New York? After all, we're New York. We're supposed to be the most progressive state in the East Coast, right? We were the first to pass, you know, a woman's right to vote, the first to adopt child labor laws. There were so many firsts in New York State. But we were also the last to adopt no-fault divorce. Sometimes New York leads and sometimes we follow. We're not a very progressive state on drug policy. Those of you who live here and follow drug policy know that it was only in 2010 that New York State repealed the most draconian drug laws in the country, Rockefeller drug laws. So we have a very, you know, I would say schizophrenic approach to drug policy. And that's where we were. That's where we were starting. But I felt it was important enough to begin to fight that fight because patients really needed access to a safe, reliable alternative to what was highly dangerous, addictive drugs. It didn't help that I started this path when we were beginning to see the effects of some of the most dangerous drugs the FDA has ever, ever approved. Whoever invented OxyContin, in my opinion, deserves a special place in hell. So that's where I began this journey. New York was on track to be the 23rd state. And so when I began the process, I partnered with a colleague in the Assembly, Assembly Member Dick Godfrey, who carried a companion bill in the Assembly for 17 years. 17 years he worked on trying to get a medical marijuana program in New York State. Never really got much traction in the New York State Senate. And I picked up the bill, and when I did, I decided that if I wanted to actually bring a policy and a law into New York State, maybe I should learn a little bit about the business. Because by then, we had a handful of states, in fact more, probably more, maybe about, as I said, when we passed the bill, we were the 23rd. So there were about 17 already in place. There were five or six that were in the pipeline. I said, if I want to do this seriously, let me go and visit a couple of these states and look at the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's see what works. Let's see what doesn't work. And knowing the state that I was in, as you know, New York is not an initiative and referendum state. We are a representative democracy, which means I had a much smaller group of people to convince. First, it was the 63 members of the New York State Senate, and then it was the most important member of the New York State Legislature, that would be the governor, who was not particularly supportive of the idea at the time. And he's no more different than a lot of people in New York. He didn't understand it, he didn't see the value of it, he wasn't prepared to bring it in, he had a lot of concerns about it. So I had to approach this bill in a very deliberative way. Go out, visit states like Colorado, visit states like California, go to New Jersey, see what worked and what didn't work, how much regulation could harm the industry, how much oversight was important. And so we believe, in the end, we came up with a very balanced approach. We were on the verge of passing the bill, and at the very last minute, the governor realized it was going to pass with or without him. And so he decided to engage in some negotiation of his own, and he narrowed the program even tighter than we did. He insisted that we start with only 5 license holders. He insisted that we limit it to only 20 dispensaries, 5 license holders, 4 dispensaries each. He insisted we narrow the number of conditions, and he insisted that there be a time frame on the program so that if in fact there were tremendous problems in it, that if all of the things that people predicted could go wrong, did go wrong, that we could pull the plug on the industry. We believed that none of those things would happen, and so in the end, the bill was signed. And we insisted, though, that because people's lives were going to be affected by it, and as an industry, whoever's going to apply for these licenses, we're going to have to bear the entire burden of this industry. The state has almost no skin in this game except for the fact of the public policy interest. We have no investment in it. It's no state contract. Whoever applies for these licenses, they own everything, all of the risk and all of the return. And to date, if you would speak to any of the license holders, they'll tell you there hasn't been a lot of return. But in any event, we insisted that there be a very tight timeline in the legislation so that licenses would be issued timely, regulations would be drawn up timely, that there would be access to patients as quickly as possible. To their credit, they lived up to every one of those timeframes. And within the first 18 months, all 5 licenses were issued. There were grow houses established in New York State. There were dispensaries open. And unfortunately, what we found pretty quickly on is one of the biggest stumbling blocks that we have encountered in New York State, and I know it's occurred in other states though, is doctors. Doctors have been a tremendous impediment to this program in New York State. And the way the bill is drafted, if you're a patient and you qualify under the law, if you have one of the qualifying conditions, you have to go to your doctor. You have to talk to your doctor about whether or not you would like to participate in the program. The doctor has to make a recommendation to the Department of Health, and the Department of Health ultimately determines whether or not you qualify. They then issue you a card and you can participate. But it's that first step in the process, your doctor. A lot of doctors in New York State have been hesitant, reluctant to get involved in this program for a variety of reasons. One, doctors are naturally risk averse. They don't know what they don't know. They didn't learn about it in medical school. And if they can't turn to the FDA for trusted research, they are reluctant to get involved. And the way the bill was structured, there was no way for patients to find doctors that were certified under the program. Also, doctors have to be trained under the program. They have to take an online training course for 4 hours and pay $195. Some doctors objected to that too. They don't like it. Doctors think they're going to get sued. They think they're going to lose their license. They think there's a whole bunch of issues about it. So they've been somewhat reluctant to get involved. And as a result, access for patients has been hindered. We pushed the Department of Health, though, in the following 6 months to expand the provider pool to include nurse practitioners and physician assistants. Because after all, in New York State, if you are a nurse practitioner and physician assistant, you can write prescriptions for Schedule II substances. So why shouldn't you be able to treat patients and recommend them for medical marijuana? The Department of Health agreed with us, and they have done that. So we've now expanded the pool of providers to include doctors, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants. we hope that that will do something to kind of increase access for patients, partly because doctors don't like competition. And if they see some of their patients turning to other practitioners, it may wake them up. We have also convinced the Department of Health that they should produce and publish the list of certified physicians who are participating in the program. They've agreed to do that as long as the doctors agree to have their names published, and they've done that to the extent that those doctors are willing to do so. And we're hoping that that will expand it. And we believe that the department is now considering expanding the number of licenses. I'm a little concerned about the expansion of licenses at this point in time because I don't believe that the patient base is there. I do think that patients in New York, though, what we do need is access points. I think that we should issue limited licenses. I've made that recommendation to the Department of Health. Limited licenses for dispensary only, and then at a certain patient density in this state, we could expand full licenses for cultivation. Being in this business, if those of you who are in it or interested in it, is probably one of the most dangerous, financially dangerous, most risky industry in the country, largely because of the federal government. And this is where I want to go now. So we are now at a point in this country where 66% of the American population lives in a state where we have either legal or recreational marijuana or both. 66% of the American population. We have 29 states that have a legal form of marijuana. Where there are eight adult use states, Maine, Massachusetts, Colorado, Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, and Alaska. All became so by public referendum. Vermont nearly became the first to do it by legislation, but unfortunately the governor vetoed it. But in 29 states, we have legal marijuana in some way, shape, or form, which means the public, the people, are indicating their tremendous support for marijuana policy change. And yet and still, you have a federal government that seems to be on a different planet. Seriously, on a different planet. Normally the way, you know, huge public policy changes occur, they start at the state level. You know this old expression that the states are the incubator of ideas. And so when you see something happening in California, then you'll see it happening in New York, you'll see it pop up in Rhode Island, and then, you know, it's not by accident, by the way. You know, we don't all suddenly wake up and, you know, have mental telepathy and start passing legislation in individual states. It starts because there's a movement, usually, and people are usually part of that movement. And you'll see individual legislators in individual states start to talk about issues because people are talking about those issues in their districts, in their communities, and in their states. And when you start to see it happening across the country slowly, eventually your federal government will pay attention, your congressional members will pay attention, and the federal government will say, well, this makes no sense. You can't have a hodgepodge of legislation. You can't have 30 states with 30 different forms of regulations over this industry, because that makes no sense, right? It doesn't make any sense. No other industry would do that. That's usually when the federal government will say, we need a federal regulatory structure. We need federal law to oversee this. Should have happened 12 states ago. But here we are, almost 30 states in, and we still have a federal government that continues to maintain this position that marijuana is a Schedule I substance, which means it is dangerous and has no redeemable value, none whatsoever. In spite of evidence to the contrary, in spite of the millions of patients who have derived public health benefit as a result of it, in spite of the fact that we have countries outside, you know, there are countries outside of the United States, just in case some of you don't know that. When I talk to federal officials, and they raise the issue that there's no research to substantiate the benefit of medical marijuana. Did you know that there's no research anywhere? I said, well, what about Canada? What about Ireland? What about Israel? It's as if those places don't exist to them. If it wasn't done here in the United States, if it's not approved by the FDA, it's as if the research was never done. It's the most amazing disconnect that I've ever seen. But it is as real as anything in Washington. And so here we are, 29 states in. Some of those states, by the way, are making so much money off the sale of marijuana that they are able to pay for their public education systems. Imagine that. Washington won't do anything about it. And we seem to have lulled ourselves into a false sense of security for people who were in the industry and people who were policymakers, that we were safe from Washington, that they weren't going to take any negative action against us, because first we had the Cole Amendment, you know, and then we had Rohrabacher and Blumenauer now, and you know, the Congress would put into their budget that they couldn't use any of the money from the federal budget to go after states, and everyone kind of lulled themselves into a false sense of security, in spite of the fact that if you are a licensed, is there any single license holder in this room? Anybody interested in me? You are. So you know what it's like. If you are interested in this business, everything you do, every dollar that you make is, imagine running a business where everything that you do and every dollar you make, you cannot claim on your federal tax return. You can't put the money in the bank. You can't go to traditional investments. It's just so complicated because everything you do is considered illegal by one level of government. It's absurd. If you are in the business and you are required to deliver your tax revenue, your tax bill to the state that you're operating in, and you can't put the money in the bank, how do you do it? You gotta bring it in cash. And by the way, any of you who have seen this, this cash stinks. Because they have to secure the cash in the same vaults that they have to secure the products in. It's the most absurd environment for a business that you've ever seen. So, but here we are. You would think, again, that you have members of Congress who represent these states that are deriving a tremendous amount of tax revenue that is supporting their state's operations, that they would turn to their colleagues in Congress and say, we gotta do something about this. This makes no sense whatsoever. Instead, we've all been lulled into this false sense of security that nobody in Washington was gonna do anything as long as you were in a state that had a legal regulated program and you were operating within the constraints of that legal regulated program. If you operate outside of it, of course, and you have a license, then, you know, the feds will come after you. But as long as you're operating within the constraints of that legal regulated program in your state, you would be safe. And you could then deal with all the other problems of operating a business that the federal government said is illegal anyway. Well, I'm not so sure anymore. Because as we saw just last week, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General of the United States, has asked Congress, has asked the Congress to give him the power to go into states, legal states, and to raid their legal marijuana programs. That should send a chill down the spine of every legislator in the Congress and every state legislator in this country. There is such a thing called the, you know, states' rights and the separation between the federal government and the states' rights and the sovereign state. We are all duly elected legislators in our own states. We have the power to adopt regulations and laws in our own states. And the idea that the United States Attorney General would threaten individual states that have taken the time and the opportunity to adopt programs in their own states is frightening to me. That is the abuse of authority of the highest order. And to ask Congress to give him permission is even worse. Now, I don't think that Congress is going to go along with it, but it's not enough for them to just say no. I believe at this point in time, it is time for Congress to do something. If they believe that medical marijuana has value because there are patients in their states that have seen a change in their quality of life, that are getting the benefit of treatment that they wanted, that have seen improvements, then they need to do something. They need to put their money where their mouth is, and they need to deschedule marijuana. Whether they want to do it for, they don't want to do it for recreational, they're not ready, then they need to do it for medical marijuana. And we need to demand that they do that. So, I believe my responsibility now as a state legislator is to continue to fit, you know, to work on the New York program, to stabilize it, to help it grow. Again, no pun intended. I know I have a colleague that was here earlier today, Senator Krueger, and I think Assemblywoman Crystal Peoples Stokes from Rochester. We're here to talk about the path forward for recreational in New York State. You know, God bless them. I know Andrew Cuomo, I just don't see him being supportive of recreational adult use. He was very insistent on the medical program being small, narrow, and demanded that we not allow smoking under the program. So it's just my own opinion, I don't see him moving towards adult recreational use. And in most states where we have adult recreational use, it takes about 10 years after medical. So I believe the best path towards adult recreational use in New York State is to stabilize the medical program in New York State, expand the patient base, have more events like this where people, you know, we begin to see cannabis, marijuana as less of a threat, more of something that's in our mainstream, in our business world, and in our medical world. But I do think also as a legislator from a state that has adopted it, that says that we have our own laws, our own constitution, and our own way of adopting rules and regulations, that I have a responsibility upon the ending of our legislative session, which is next week, to go to Washington and to put my time and effort into lobbying the members of Congress to take their foot off the neck of this industry, deschedule marijuana, and provide some stability, not just to patients, but to an industry that is growing by leaps and bounds. And I would hope. That all of you who are interested in this, whether you're interested in it for personal reasons or professional reasons, that you would join in those efforts. Change has to now come through the halls of Congress. We cannot trust, I don't believe, the Attorney General's office. We can't trust the Justice Department. I'm not sure what the White House thinks. You know, I heard the President speak during the campaign that he believes in medical marijuana. I don't think he's too keen on recreational, but he can do something about it by putting his signature on a piece of legislation that the Congress can pass. Laws are made by Congress, they're not made by the Justice Department, and we need Congress to act. So that's what I will be doing going forward, and you know, I hope to see you guys all here next year at the Cannabis World Expo, and hopefully we'll have some good news to share, that Congress has finally done the right thing by the 66% of the American people that have said the time is right for change in marijuana policy. Thank you all for coming.